Go ahead and turn to Daniel chapter 6. And as you make your way there, I want you to think of an experience maybe that you've had where you experienced some form of culture shock. A time where you found yourself in a place, in a situation, in a context that was completely foreign to what you're familiar with. To be honest, for me, I've not really experienced a whole lot of culture shock in my life. I've spent the good majority, in fact, all of my life in the northern part of Illinois. I basically moved from northwest Illinois to northeast Illinois, and that's as far as I've traveled in almost 42 years now. And so in the middle of that, I did have to adapt from country life to city life, but I didn't have to learn any new words or a new language or anything like that. Like I said, my geographical area didn't move a whole lot. And I know for some of you, you haven't moved far at all from where you grew up. So your geographical area is limited to the Chicagoland, and that's where you've lived your entire life. Back in January, just a couple months before the cruise, before the pandemic started, which I'm really thankful for, I'm glad it held off for Lori and I to be able to go on a cruise. And so now you can't go on a cruise anywhere, anyhow. But we managed to go on one nice and safely in the middle of January. And for me, that was my very first time being able to leave the United States. And so it was a very, very new experience. Each morning, we would wake up in a different location. So we left from Miami, and the first morning we woke up, we were in Key West, which is still part of the United States. It's an island filled with chickens. I should have put a picture of that. There's chickens running all over. The next morning, we woke up at Disney Key Island, a special island that they have. And then the third morning, we woke up in Nassau, Bahamas, so officially out of the country. And then the last morning, we woke up back in Miami. And so that was our adventure. And the picture on the screen is a picture from a shop that was in Nassau, Bahamas, as we got off. And you have the little touristy places to go to. And there was this maze of a place to go buy things. So it's called the Straw Market. All kinds of local vendors all sharing their items. And as you can see, they would fill their little area with as many items to sell as they could possibly do. And the thing that made that experience a culture shock for me and my whole Midwest American experience is the fact that none of the millions of items in that straw market had a price on it. Nothing had a price because everything was negotiable. It was worse than trying to figure out the price of something at Kohl's. You know, you go and they keep saying percent. It's like, I don't know what the price, you don't really find out until you get at the cash register what the price is. Now, normally in most situations, I like finding a good deal and I don't mind bargaining for a good deal. But this situation at the straw market was quite different. For me, that experience in that market was difficult because you're trying to bargain with people who are in an impoverished situation. And just earlier, the year before in 2019, they had Hurricane Dorian go through and just wipe everything out. And so for me, the idea of trying to save a dollar here or a dollar there with people who don't have much, I was not interested in bargaining. But I did feel like I needed to participate in that bargaining process in some way. I didn't want to be disrespectful. I didn't want to just give whatever they said either. And so I felt like I needed to do my part. And that's actually how I ended up with all of these little turtles. There's going to be a picture on the screen, but you can see just how tiny they are. These little tiny carved turtles, some wood, some glass, some stone, a variety of turtles. And as we went through the straw market, we quickly realized, first off, that they're going to follow you. If you stop for a second and even glance at their area, they're going to be following you and trying to get you to buy what they have. And so that was quickly a different thing. I mean, I've went to garage sales where you bargained on a price, but they never chase you down the road trying to keep you to make a deal. So I noticed in the straw market, all these little vendors they had, almost all of them had these little tiny turtles. And then I came up with a bargaining plan. Whatever price they would initially propose, I would accept that price so long as they also threw in just a little turtle. So that way I felt like I was getting something to sweeten the deal a little bit. Yes, I'll pay the $35 you say for that item, but throw in one of these little cute turtles. And so it went perfectly. They would make an offer. I would do a counter offer that included the little sea turtles. And then we didn't have to do any more rounds of negotiation. And so that's my recent experience with culture shock. And I found myself in another country, another culture, a place that operated by a different set of rules, a place radically different and unfamiliar where for the first time ever in my life, I really felt like a foreigner. And with that in mind, let's read from Daniel chapter 6. Go ahead and stand with me as we read this morning. With your experiences of culture shock in mind as well. Daniel chapter 6, I'm going to read verses 1 through 10. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, "O King Darius, live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. The word of the Lord this morning. Please be seated. At this point in Daniel's life, in chapter 6, from where we just read, we need to remember or keep in mind that Daniel, at this point, has spent a majority of his life in Babylon. Brought into exile as a young man in chapter 1 during the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, at the time he was put in the lion's den during the reign of Darius, the one we just read about, Daniel may have been in his 80s. When he first arrived in Babylon, he would have been much like the young girl holding a dog, standing and saying, "Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore." Even though Daniel was a young man, he was a bright young man, and he would have felt the weight of the culture shock, the shock that comes from being ripped out of your cultural context in Jerusalem and being plopped down into a very different context in Babylon, a different culture with different rules, with different foods, and with an entirely different religious system. Daniel, welcome to your new life in exile. Your old familiar life is a thing of the past. Here is your new life now, whether you like it or not. As I mentioned last week at the onset of this series, Lessons During Quarantine, the life experiences of the people that we're going to look at, both that we looked at this last week, this week, and over the next couple weeks, most of those people's situations is going to seem really extreme to anything you and I have ever experienced. Knowing what I know about you, I know none of you have been swallowed by a large fish, and I know that none of you have been taken into any form of captivity by an invading army. And at the same time, as I also said last week, I believe there are plenty of things that we can learn from these people's experiences. Times of quarantine, lockdown, isolation, social disconnectedness, even if their experience was more extreme. The truth is that you don't have to be shipped off to a foreign land in order to feel like you are a person in exile. Sometimes all it takes, instead of moving from one area in the world to another place in the world, sometimes instead of that, all you need to have happen is for the world underneath your feet to change. For the world right where you are to radically change into something like it hasn't been before. In that scenario, instead of Dorothy being, carted off by a tornado and plopped down somewhere else, it would be like Dorothy staying right where she is, but Kansas changing on its own into something new. When I think about how much this world has changed just over the past 20 years of my life, which is the last half of my life, I can't imagine how much more shocking it must be for people who are 20, 30, and 40 years older than me to look at how fast things have changed and how much things have changed over those years. I'm fairly certain that there are people, plenty of people, who live in the same geographical area as they have always been, but they look around and think, I have a feeling we're not in Chicagoland anymore. The world I remember from my childhood is not the world I live in now. I haven't moved, but the world sure has. It may be a different path to exile than the one that Daniel had, but the experience is still a culture shock with the world around us. I think that it's also important to remember that even though you may experience something that feels new to you, it doesn't mean that the experience itself is new. In the grand scheme of things, there are things that may be brand new to our experience, it may be brand new to the experience of the United States, but it's not new in the context of world history or ancient history. As it says in the book of Ecclesiastes, there is nothing new under the sun. Human history is filled with peaks and valleys, ebbs and flows, and each of us get to experience just a small slice of that history. And over the course of Christian history, over the past 2,000 years plus, Christ followers have routinely sensed a disconnect between the kinds of lives we're called to live and the kinds of lives everyone else seems to be living. It should be the least surprising thing ever for a Christ follower to look out and see in the world a different set of values than the ones we're called to live by. And sometimes that difference is noticed because things are actually changing and there's an actual trend to observe. And other times there's things that we come across that has been there all along, but you didn't notice it before. Situations where growth and maturation, as you get older, you notice things and you see things that you maybe didn't see in your youth. Something's been there all along, but only now you're able to see it. As I see it, we live at a time where both of those things are happening simultaneously. There are actual shifts in the world, accompanied by actually seeing things that have been there all along, but now more easily noticed. And both of those things taken together, both of those experiences make the feeling of being a foreigner in exile in a strange land an easy feeling to connect to. And as I said earlier, this is not a new experience for Christ followers. There has always been a marked difference between the lives Christians are trying to live and the lives of the rest of the world. And I say trying because there are plenty of times over the course of Christian history where Christians have looked just as much like the world as we would like to, more than we would like to admit. Times where they could have tried harder to live differently as a faithful response to the life of Jesus. So what do we learn from the experience of Daniel? Daniel did not compromise. When it came to the life that God had called Daniel to live, the move into exile did not result in a compromise of his values. The values he needed to live by were not contingent on his lot in life. It didn't matter if it was good times or in bad. It didn't matter if he was in Jerusalem or in Babylon. God's way needed to be his way. And we see this early on in his life experience as soon as he enters into exile, when there's a situation where there's food and drink being provided to the servants of the king or people who are being prepared to be servants of the king. While some of the other people who are in the same exile situation as Daniel made compromises and ate the food and drink, Daniel and his three friends declined. The chief of the court officials said to them, "Here are your choices," and their response was, "No, thank you." They were not going to defile themselves and instead did a bargaining thing for an alternative path where they could have vegetables and water instead of the king's food and wine. A path that left them healthier than the ones who compromised, and a path that elevated them to new and higher positions in service to the king. Maintaining your spiritual health or even improving your spiritual health during a challenging time, especially one like a pandemic, is not easy. And yet, even in exile, that's exactly what Daniel did. If Daniel's spiritual health was tethered to his ability to go to a synagogue or go to the temple there in Jerusalem, if that was the thing he needed each week to be spiritually healthy, his spiritual health would have plummeted as soon as he was plopped into Babylon. And I never really thought about that part of Daniel's story until this. You know, obviously we've had to go without church for 3 months in person. Daniel would have had to go through it for most of his life. I don't think there was any synagogues or temples in Babylon, and so he didn't have a place of worship where he could gather. For decades, like I said, if he was in his 80s, he probably would have had 40 or 50 years, which is much worse, obviously, than 3 months. And yet, despite the absence of synagogues and the inability for him to gather for worship with a large group of believers, his faith was constant. Habits that were formed in the early part of Daniel's life sustained him over the course of his life, well into the 80s. His spiritual health and maturity, despite the absence of a synagogue gathering, is a testimony to his dedication and his loyalty to the Lord. Time in exile made it even more important that he stay close to the Lord, and that was exemplified in the prayer life that we read about. 3 times a day, no matter what. His life was so far above reproach that those who tried to get him in trouble knew that the only way to get him in trouble was to bring him into conflict between the law of Babylon and the law of God. Daniel's life should be what comes to mind first when we read a verse like 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 12. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Daniel lived a life entirely faithful to the Lord, even in exile in Babylon, fueled by times on his knees, lifting up prayers and giving thanks. Each and every time there's an opportunity with the scripture passage and the message to highlight the value of prayer in living a godly life, I'm going to make sure I don't miss that opportunity. So I'm going to ask, how are your prayer lives going throughout this pandemic? From what I hear, doing the same things and expecting different results is the definition of insanity. And perhaps the best way to pursue better results, the results you're wanting to see in your life, involves an evaluation of your prayer life. If you need a suggestion, I would suggest the first place you look is there with the prayer life, and that's where Daniel started his day. That's where Daniel ended his day, and somewhere in the middle, he was there again on his knees praying. Prayers that sustained his faith that the Lord was with him right where he was. And the end result of Daniel's faith-filled life, fueled by prayer, was the gift of God's protection. I'm going to read from chapter 6 again. If you flip over to the next page, or it's chapter 6, verses 16 through 23. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of the nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. God had been with Daniel throughout the course of his life, and when that life was in danger, God protected it. God wasn't finished with what he had started in Daniel's life. What had started in Jerusalem, God was going to bring to fruition even in Babylon. Daniel's life was not in the hands of Nebuchadnezzar or the administrators or the satraps, and it was not in the mouths of the lions. His life was in God's hands, safe and sound. And the good news for us this morning is that the protection Daniel experienced in the den of lions is available to you and me as well. That protection that we have available to us is the result of a prayer as well, and that comes from a prayer prayed by Jesus himself. And this is from John chapter 17, verses 6 through 12. "I have revealed you to those whom you gave me out of the world. They were yours, you gave them to me, and they have obeyed your word. Now they know that everything you have given me comes from you, for I gave them the words you gave me, and they accepted them.
They knew with certainty that I came from you, and they believed that you sent me. I pray for them. I'm not praying for the world, but for those you have given me, for they are yours. All I have is yours, and all you have is mine, and glory has come to me through them. I will remain in the world no longer, but they are still in the world, and I am coming to you. Holy Father, protect them by the power of your name, the name you gave me, so that they may be one as we are one. While I was with them, I protected them and kept them safe by that name you gave me. None has been lost except the one doomed to destruction, so that scripture would be fulfilled. This morning, I know where my help comes from. My help comes from the Lord. When it comes to the challenges you encounter in life, there is no substitute for the kind of protection God provides for those who are faithful to him, for those who refuse to compromise on God's values in exchange for whatever the sweet-tasting meal might be on the table. No thanks, we'll take the vegetables and water. And if you need vegetables and water, I have plenty of vegetables in the garden. This morning, we are going to be closing with the same song we finished with last week, and I think we probably should finish with every single week, close with this song. It's a wonderful song, He Who Began a Good Work in You. And what I would like to remind you about this morning is that God's plans do not get put on hold because of a pandemic, because of an exile, because of anything like that. God's plans, whatever they are, whatever it is that God wants to do through his people, God will keep on doing until it's brought to completion. Our role in all of that is to keep on trusting, no matter how things shift or change over the course of our lives, a confident and steadfast trust in a faithful God who watches over his people. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Please stand as we sing.